folks, if you want to get in touch with us, look at Bloomberg Surveillance on Facebook. Ken's got his own page out. You can send love notes to Ken on Facebook. And we're at Twitter as well on Tom_Keene_. Having a lot of fun with that as well.
This is Bloomberg, the first word for this Tuesday, September 14th, 2010. Good morning. I'm Ken Pruitt at Bloomberg World Headquarters in New York. Our guest is Simon Derrick, Chief Currency Strategist at Bank of New York Mellon in London. Simon, good morning.
Good morning, Ken.
Well, is all the talk over now about the Bank of Japan intervening in the yen now that the Prime Minister has won a power struggle within his own party?
I don't think that talk's going to go away at all. I mean, certainly both Mr. Khan and his opposition for the leadership race were both proponents of intervention. I think the problem that they're really facing here, though, is that if they're going to intervene, they're going to have to intervene on their own. Certainly there is absolutely no support apparent from elsewhere in the world for any kind of multilateral intervention. And I think that investors at the moment are realizing that. As a result, they tend to think that perhaps the best that the Ministry of Finance and the Bank of Japan can do is perhaps slow the yen's rise than actually being able to reverse it. And for an example of exactly this happening in another currency over the last 6 months, this is exactly what happened in Switzerland, where the Swiss National Bank attempted to stop the Swiss franc strengthening and failed signally.
Well, what's been behind the rise in the yen? I mean, when you look at the condition of the Japanese economy, there are plenty of reasons you don't want to have money there.
I think that's a very fair point. I think the thing, though, Ken, is that over the course of the last 6 months in particular, currencies that were traditionally considered to be safe havens, and in particular I'm thinking of the euro, have become seen rather differently by the world's investors, in particular by a lot of the central banks that manage reserves. As a result, they've been looking for credible alternative homes for their money. They've been looking to diversify rather more widely. One of the things that's particularly noticeable this year, for example, is that China has picked up very smartly its buying of Japanese government bonds. And when you see places, people like China starting to increase investments, other investors take note as well. It's that safe haven aspect, the fact that China and Japan, whatever you might think, isn't about to go bankrupt, isn't about to default on its debt. And whilst that might be a low possibility for Europe, there are still question marks over places like Greece that give investors pause for thought.
Well, the yen right now at 83.25. What's your forecast, Simon?
I think it's going to continue going down. I certainly think there will be intervention along the way, so I don't think this is going to be a smooth ride at all. We've got to see the first round of that, really, before we can get a firm sense. But yes, I do think there is a good chance that we could get some time over the next 3 to 6 months to test the historic lows just below 80.
What about the euro? It's $1.2854 now. Where is it by the end of the year?
My personal feeling is that the problems for the euro that we identified in the first half of the year will come back to haunt it. Obviously, I think over the course of the last few months, there's been this debate about whether which was worse, if you like, the euro or the US. And I certainly wouldn't deny that there are problems in both. But in Europe, I think we've had a little bit of a false dawn of hope over the last few months. Obviously, the German numbers have helped. The stress test back in June helped. But now we're starting to get the hard reality. We're starting to see a deterioration a little bit in the German data. We've had the news out that came out last week that perhaps the stress tests were not as rigorous as perhaps they could have been. We've seen problems emerging in Ireland, once again with Anglo-Irish. I think all these things are a stark reminder to investors that the problems for Europe simply won't go away that easily, that they are structural in nature. As a result, I think that in what promises to be perhaps a cautious end to the year, I think there's a good chance that investors could pull away from the euro. I think that we could see it actually starting to test back down towards the lows that we tested in June. So my prediction for the end of the year, I think there's a fairly reasonable chance we could be testing towards the 120s, maybe even a little lower.
Well, the latest from Germany, the strongest economy in the eurozone, is that investor confidence is down to a 19-month low, and that's because of various austerity measures. How does that affect trading?
Well, I think that feeds into exactly what I'm thinking, Ken, that if Germany has been the one bright spark in the European economy over the summer. If we now back to the sorts of levels that we're really talking about in the depths of the crisis in terms of confidence, because the austerity measures have started to kick in, then I think that we clearly got to expect around Europe a sharp slowdown in confidence as well. Remember, Germany is really the engine for the European economy. And if Germany is faltering, then clearly the expectation is that the others will falter as well.
Simon Derrick, the chief currency strategist at Bank of New York Mellon, on the line from London. Our guest is Carsten Brzeski, senior economist for Germany at ING Belgium in Brussels. Carsten, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, latest news out of Germany is investor confidence fell more than forecast, down to a 19-month low in September. What are Germans concerned about?
They are concerned about the global outlook. They are concerned that a possible slowdown in the Chinese economy, not a strong pickup in the U.S. economy, could choke off the export-driven recovery in Germany. But I think they are too worried. And the ZEW already has been in the past not a very good forecaster. Last time we've seen such a slide over a couple of months was in 2006, actually. And 2006 and 2007 were the best growth years for the German economy in the last decade.
Well, then what's your reading of the situation then, if the ZEW survey isn't all that accurate?
I think right now we just see a return to normality. I once compared the German economy kind of being the Superman of the Eurozone in the second quarter, and now this Superman has turned Clark Kent again, and we will see a slowdown in growth in the second half of the year, but it's still good. It's still good. It's more or less in line with potential growth rates in Germany.
Well, there were some predictions that continental European growth would exceed that in the U.S. Are you in that camp?
No, I don't. I think the German economy has the potential to outpace the U.S. economy because, say, the structural weaknesses are not there in Germany. We see that the German economy is moving towards a self-sustained recovery with the labor market improving, with the private consumption picking up. But it has been an illusion, I think, for the last 40 years. The Eurozone cannot decouple from the U.S. economy.
It cannot.
No.
Does that have to do with the balance of trade?
The U.S. is still, I think, one of the, let's say, the three or four most important trading partners of the Eurozone. We see that financial markets are pretty much interlinked. Just remember the last, say, the month when there was the fear about a double dip in the U.S., you also saw European stocks sliding, so there was no decoupling on financial markets. Let's say that the Eurozone has become more adolescent and more mature. They can do a bit without the U.S., but not entirely.
Well, does growth in Germany offset weakness in other parts of the Eurozone, Greece, Portugal, Spain?
It partly does. But unfortunately, as I said, the German economy is losing some steam while powering ahead, and this will not be enough to offset weak growth in the seven European countries, which makes actually the monetary policy for the ECB so complicated right now, because one size fits all does not fit all.
So who has the right approach?
Right now, the ECB is, I think, rightly doing so to focus more on the weaker in the Eurozone. So the ECB is focusing on the weak countries, and it's focusing on the financial sector. So really supporting these countries to grow out and allowing the German economy to gather some more traction in the couple. And so they are right to, let's say, keep interest rates on hold right now. They are right to just keep the German economy powering ahead, and then hoping that in a year from now the southern European countries are in a better shape to probably swallow a first rate hike.
So it's a question basically of buying time.
It's right now it's buying time and see how things evolve. Yes.
Well, we're looking at the euro here at $1.2845. What's your forecast going forward?
We will see it more or less horizontally until the end of the year, and then we expect a further strengthening of the euro in the course of 2011, because we see that the ECB will start hiking earlier than the Fed, and we see, let's say, the structural weaknesses in the U.S. being more significant than in the eurozone. So this is why the euro will continue to strengthen throughout 2011.
Carson,
go to 140.
Carson, let's turn our attention to the UK, where inflation is still above the level that officials want it. We're looking at inflation and slow growth at the same time here, aren't we?
Yes, exactly. We are, but part of this in inflation hike, I think it was driven by one-offs and especially by the VAT rate hike at the beginning of the year. So we should. I think it should be rather one-off effects, and I would expect that inflation will fall in the coming months.
Well, we were talking earlier about various government proposals to solving the economic problems. Is the new government in the UK going about it the right way with an austerity budget?
Yes, I think this is the only way that you can go forward right now. Really, you need to continue with fiscal austerity, and you need to kind of to bite the bullet and go through it.
So where does sterling go as a result here? It's just over $1.54 right now.
Vis-a-vis the euro, and here we see it actually really continuing rather flat with a little peak in the at the early 2011, but we see the euro sterling at 0.83 at the end of 2011.
What about the U.S. economy, Carsten? We have Warren Buffett speaking at an investor conference out in the Rockies, saying that he's extremely bullish on America and there's not going to be a double dip. Is Mr. Buffett correct?
He might, because but I think the big question is not whether it's a double dip or not. The big question is how can the U.S. structurally get out of the current situation? And I think here we see some encouraging signals from the labor market, where employment growth is picking up. Employment growth in the private sector is picking up. I think we see an improvement in lending to corporates, but the big misery is still on the housing market. And there might be repercussions from the housing market to labor mobility and the labor market. I think it will still take a while, and we assume that the U.S. first has to go through a period of weaker growth, whether it's a double dip or not, before it can really, let's say, return to earlier strength.
Carsten Brzeski, senior economist at ING Belgium, on the line from Brussels. This is Bloomberg, the first word on Bloomberg Radio.
Copyright Bloomberg LP 2010.